Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me, as ever.
Yes, co-host, Mike Cosentino is here. We're going to take on the NRA this morning. I'm going to bet that this is one of Silent Gary's favorite issues, number one. So he's not going to be so silent today.
I don't think he's going to be silent today.
Yeah, that's
because this is like Gary's favorite.
Yeah. And we were sitting around before the show began talking about guns and the things that we've shot. Apparently, I'm the only one that hasn't killed a living.
Both Gary and I were.
Varmint hunting, I guess, is.
We had agreed to bring our guns into the studio, but we didn't want to frighten.
We didn't want to violate Kazin's gun policy,
and we also didn't want to embarrass you because Mike doesn't actually have a gun.
I don't own a gun. I'm going to buy one though. As soon as I get $250 together, I'm going to trot down to Walmart and buy a gun.
It was too difficult for me to settle on which one to bring.
I see.
I had so many.
The gun safe. Yes. When you have all your antique guns and your grandfather, they'll probably explode in your face.
Yeah, we have. Actually, my brother keeps it, but we've got my grandfather's .45 from World War I.
Oh, geez.
I think it's called a 1911, something like that. But it's in great, it's in firing shape. One of the problems the gun industry has. This is a really old gun. It's over 100 years old, or about 100 years old, and it still fires. It still works. And the problem that the NRA has, and the problem the gun industry has, it keeps scaring people to buy new guns because guns just don't go obsolete, and then they don't get broken unless you drop them or they misfire or something.
Want more firepower.
Yes. So they've got to constantly up the ante, or everybody just sits around with the guns that they've had for 45 years or whatever it is.
Well, that's it. And they have, people don't own one gun. The stats are, six, seven, eight guns.
Actually, it goes much more than that. The gun ownership in the U.S. is actually dropping. Only 22% of Americans own guns. But there are more than 30 million guns in the hands of civilians.
It's 112 guns per 100 people in the U.S. It's the highest rate in the world.
More than 6 million Americans own 10 or more guns.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very high gun ownership. Now, if you look at the statistics, we were talking earlier.
But this is important.
Yes.
Nobody here is anti-gun. I love things that go boom. I've got this illustrious military background. You guys both own guns, so nobody
deeply illustrious.
We want to establish this at the outset of the show. We are anti insanity. To have unregulated guns is insane.
And you wanted to talk about the Second Amendment. When you look at a list of the countries that have a lot of guns, we're up there with Yemen and so forth and so on, all these...
We have more than anybody else.
Yeah, we have more per
person. But in terms of gun deaths, we're up
there
with
the
others,
world. Yeah. And we have a more gun violence in the United States than any industrialized country with similar population. But I was going to say, fairly high up on the list, we were talking this about the show, and I'm leading because I want to lead into what Mike wants to talk about, the Second Amendment, is Switzerland. Switzerland has a fairly high gun ownership. I know it's in the top 10, and maybe in the top 5. But Swiss gun ownership is because they actually have a militia, and you leave your rifle at home. You take your rifle home. Every Swiss man, I think, really has a rifle and is part of the militia. And if you're not a felon or something, and they keep the ammunition, so they don't. So the statistics you have to look at a little carefully, but they have a high level of gun ownership because they actually have a militia. And you were going to talk about Second Amendment, Mike.
By keep, you mean control the ammunition.
Well, the government keeps the ammunition, and they have it's a complicated system where you report to certain depots and grab your ammunition. But even the military, they don't give you live ammunition, when you're, a lot of the time. Certainly, so, in ROTC, they didn't give us live ammunition.
No, you shoot yourself, then they know that. So,
unless you're in the shooting range.
So, yeah, these 27 words of the Second Amendment have been, as far as some people believe, distorted beyond anyone's imagination to imagine. Like a well-regulated. So let's see. What does it say? It says the Second Amendment. The text of the Second Amendment. It says a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The first four words are a well-regulated militia. And, of course, the interpretation seems to be, and at least in the last 50 years, on the last few words, the right of the people to keep and bear arms.
But I think the original intention was more like Switzerland, was everybody was in, you know, if you were, everybody was in the militia. If you were in good standing, the militias drilled in the town square, and they wanted you to be able to, you're supposed to have a weapon because it's part of your responsibility as a militia, as a citizen.
Well, I don't think.
So it was written for, I think, very different reasons than it's interpreted.
But now. I don't think the three, geniuses that are sitting around the microphones this morning are going to be able to argue the meaning of the Second Amendment to a satisfying conclusion. Does it mean individual right to bear arms? Does it mean well-regulated militia like you're talking about? And that's the context in which you're allowed to. It says both.
It's deeply ambiguous. It's deeply ambiguous.
And go ahead.
It means both. It actually stems from the Bill of Rights, the English Bill of Rights in I believe it's 1500s or 1600s England. That when you look at all of the writings of the Founding Fathers, it was clear that they intended both. That if you put yourself back in the 1700s, when it was written,
1791, it was ratified.
It was ratified, but it was written a few years before that, and it was part of the Bill of Rights, which was a compromise. The entire Bill of Rights was a compromise in order to get the Constitution ratified.
And originally, the Second Amendment, some of the drafts required that you have a gun and be part of the militia. And Quakers were nonviolent, didn't believe in violence, and didn't believe in guns. And so they modified. They took the thing that the provision out that would force everybody to who was in the militia to have a gun, and everyone to be in the militia because of Quakers and the Amish folks. And
except for urban areas, everyone needed all the rural people, which was primarily rural, needed guns to hunt, to feed themselves. They needed guns to protect themselves from wild animals. And they, since we were stealing the land from Native Americans, we needed guns to defend ourselves against, you know, Native Americans.
Well, long-term borrowing of the land.
Right,
Gary.
Right. Okay. But it was clear that it meant both. The thing was that every colony or state had its own militias. There were numerous ones.
True.
And part of the Constitution, when you dig through it, talks about the leadership of those militias. You know, there was a battle over verbal battle, I should specify, between whether the feds should control the militias or if the states should control the militias.
And I know that George Washington and Hamilton and a lot of the guys who led the Revolutionary Army were very down on militias, found them unreliable and stuff.
Right.
And other people felt as strongly, I think Jefferson, that militias, there should be no standing army. In other words, this would be a country with no standing army. It would just have a militia. Anybody came here, the militia would call themselves up. And But people who ran the Revolutionary War wanted to have a standing army of professional soldiers, and that's sort of what happened.
We're still fighting the same, we're having the same discussion today that they were having in the 1700s and early 1800s of federalism versus anti-federalism.
Right.
And, you know, there were the Federalist won with the Constitution, and with the ratification, it's clear that the Federalists won. But we have people, some of our elected representatives in Arizona are among them, that are still arguing against the federal government and against federalism in general.
They almost aren't even just arguing, Gary. They hate the federal government.
Yes.
They believe that everything the federal government does is wrong. No amount of evidence will affect this view. And their arguments are exactly like Southerners who wanted to keep slavery, right?
Right.
I mean, they're exactly the same. There's the states' rights comes from, first, from slavery, wanting to keep to have his slaves. Secondly, keeping wanting to discriminate against black folks after the Civil War. And thirdly, to oppose the Civil Rights Voting Acts and stuff for back in the Johnson administration, where they forced the states to allow people of color to register to vote. That's the history of states' rights. It's a real nasty history.
That this argument of origin doesn't matter. But all I want is background checks, guys. I mean, you know, I don't want to spend 45 minutes talking about the Second Amendment or the history, or I just want background checks. You know, but yeah, we got any just some reasonable gun policy.
Let me put this
a
in
stinking per- background check. Don't let people don't get crazy.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Don't let people sell guns at gun shows to crazy people. Is that too much to ask? Am I really like this ultra liberal because I think background checks?
Actually, the vast majority
70%
of the
Americans agree with me. By the way,
that's right. Most Americans agree with you.
Let me put this in perspective. I want to read a few statistics. We're kind of jumping ahead to the potential solution, and we haven't talked about the problem.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt that the Second Amendment, allows,
the way it is in journalism,
allows people to have guns, and that there are two parts to it. But let's talk about what's going on. There was a mass shooting again this morning at Penn Station in New York City. I think three people were shot. And mass shootings, depending on which, you know, source you look at, are defined as three or four.
And there's a mass shooting now in the United States, my understanding is, about every 55 days.
Oh, no. It's if you use three or four, we have a mass shooting. We've had 318 so far this year. At the end of October.
Okay, I guess the statistics I saw were for larger mass shootings.
That's every day.
But they're very frequent.
They're,
and they seem to be getting more frequent.
They're pretty much every day. We have more than 3,000 shooting deaths each year, including 500 children killed. We have 7,500 children wounded by guns each year. We have, so far, as I mentioned, we had 318 mass shootings through October. Overall, more than 30,000 shootings have occurred this year. Last year, it was 33,500 for the entire year. Since the Umpqua Community College shooting in Roseburg, Oregon, that we've had at least 79 schools go on lockdown for threat of gun violence. We have much more gun violence than any other developed country, but overall violence is declining. You know, if you look at all violence, not just gun violence, is declining. The South, including Arizona, is by far the most violent region of the U.S.
Arizona has a few less guns per person than places like Arkansas and Louisiana and Mississippi and Wyoming and Montana. I think it's because we have a fairly large urban population here. But we're like in the second tier of gun ownership, not in the top tier of heavy gun ownership here in Arizona.
Is the door locked?
And
go ahead.
And I want to to talk about. There are two things I think are really important is that we hear all the time about Chicago having all of its murders, and it's the murder capital, which, by the way, it's not. But and the gun rights people want to say that it's because they have stricter gun laws. That is not at all the case. There are very thorough academic studies that show that states with stricter gun laws and areas with stricter gun laws have fewer gun deaths than states that don't, or right. cities that don't.
And gun ownership is in states with high rural populations, and if a county has a town of 2,000 is the biggest town or less, there's a high level of there's a much higher level of gun ownership, I guess what Gary is saying, in rural America than there is in urban America. And as he said, the rate has been falling, although Chicago has had an uptick, and even New York has had a slight uptick in crime this year after declining, I think, since the
1990s or
yeah,
late 80s.
Yeah, it's been going down. The crime rate's been going down. The violence rate's been going down. Violence going down.
If you look at Chicago, which does have strict gun laws, the police did they collected all the guns that had been used in crimes or that were confiscated. And from 2001 to 2012, the beginning of 2012, they confiscated or recovered more than 50,000 guns. And of those, more than half came from outside of Illinois, outside the state, and very few of them came from within Chicago, where it's had strict gun laws. The thing is, they were coming from as far away as Arizona.
That was true when I lived in New York. In fact, there was a couple of gun shops, I think, I'm trying to remember back quite a few years, in South Carolina, that the actual majority of the guns that the police confiscated after shootings in New York were all from a couple of different gun shops in the South that had, because they don't have gun regulations, and they made their way to New York and
becomes a lucrative blackmail or a black market business.
Yeah.
And states like, in California, many of the guns used in crimes there come from Arizona because we have far looser gun laws than California does. So it's, if you're going to address the problem of gun ownership and keeping them out of the hands of people that are going to use them for crimes, you have to have fairly universal gun laws across the country, because what happens is the black market sellers in places like Chicago go as far away as Mississippi they actually go all over the country, but Mississippi is a big pipeline, and Indiana, both those states have lax gun laws, and so they go buy a mass of guns from those states, bring them into Chicago, and sell them on the streets without any sort of background check. So you can't deal with the overall gun violence problem.
What do you think is causing the uptick, since you brought it up, of violence in Chicago, if it's not the gun laws being strict?
Well, it's a very, people want to simplify everything these days, but it's a very complex issue because they took the projects, in the 50s and 60s in big cities, created projects for the poor, and they became mostly African American. And so what Chicago did is they had such problems within the projects with crime that they tore down the projects and they relocated those people around the city. Well, the gangs that existed in the projects then became gangs in neighborhoods all over Chicago. And so they carved out their turf. And so, one gang won't allow another gang onto its turf.
Right.
And so now you have shootings all over the city and the suburbs because the gangs were distributed throughout the city.
When I was in New York, they raided one gang in the Bronx. I think they arrested 36 guys. the murder rate in the Bronx dropped in half. So a small one gang was committing half the murders in this entire. The Bronx is bigger than most cities in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a fairly small number of people committing lots of crimes, and it was really basically turf wars and defending, you know, and
this comes
drug
out of,
deals gone bad.
And it's not a racial problem. It comes out of economics. It comes out of the lack of opportunity and the lack of money. And if you have, you know, if you come from a place where you have no role models and you have poor opportunities for education or advancement in any way, crime becomes an attractive alternative.
Well, while I am deeply interested in your statistics and your history of Chicago projects, what I am concerned about mostly on this morning show are the millions and millions and millions of guns sold, transferred, without to all sorts of people that people know shouldn't have a gun, to people who are holding them illegally. And we have an article from Kate Masters here, written just October 21st, 2015, that talks about that. And this number is hotly contested, depending on. And once again, as you guys have pointed out, it all depends on how you look at some of these issues.
It's how you define things, like what is a mass shooting.
But the number I'm going to throw.
But the other thing, just Mike, the reason she and everybody else is having trouble with the statistics is the NRA will not allow any research collection
point.
Gun violence and gun usage and gun ownership. They have systematically shut down any kind of research so that we could find the answers to these questions. There's no federal funding at all for any research. It's basically banned. So go ahead.
Which also, by the way, reflects that states' rights versus federalism issues. You know, having the Fed come in and collect all that information from all 50 states is somehow seen as an infringement of states' rights.
They've even banned a lot of law enforcement agencies tracking it.
That's right.
And so a lot of the information is forbidden. So a lot of the information on gun violence comes from pediatricians. And from medical societies who track it because they deal with it.
Well, we have such excellent algorithms these days to do everything. They can predict probably better than the actual collection of the data.
The Centers for Disease Control, which began studying gun violence because it's depending on how you what statistics you find, it's like third or fourth largest cause of death in the United States. They started tracking it, and the NRA got Congress to pass laws to prevent the CDC from tracking it. You can't, if you're a pediatrician, you're actually banned by law from talking with parents of young children about gun safety. How crazy is that?
So that's part of the problem with getting at the statistics. And as Gary's saying, it depends on the age group. But guns are a major cause of death, and particularly among younger folks.
40%. 40%. The number we're going to settle on this morning, or at least going to talk about.
40% of what, Michael?
Yeah, what does that mean? 40% of gun owners did not go through a background check to get their gun. And so the statistic that should bother us most, and which bothers me most, are, as I said before, the millions and millions of people who have guns who shouldn't have guns, who, even in our very loose gun culture, our gun society, they have guns illegally.
So you want to take Gary's guns away because he didn't do background checks?
Oh, because he didn't get the one. I don't want to take them away, but I do want him to have a background check. Yeah, absolutely. For every gun he has.
Let me throw out. Let me throw out another.
That would take too much time. So
I'm not worried. I got time.
We talk about how difficult it is to get statistics because of the NRA, which is true. Let me throw out a statistic from the NRA.
Do it.
This comes from the NRA. It comes from a video where they had a magician doing a card trick and figured out the odds of what it took to for the magician to do what he did with the trick. And the NRA itself says the odds of you needing or using a gun to protect your life is roughly one, and I'm not even going to read the whole number, it's 68 digits. So it's an infinitesimal chance that you're ever going to need a gun for self-defense. And the myth that, you know, carrying a gun, and this is where I draw the line. I own guns. I have all my life since my parents gave me a gun when I was 13.
They waited until you were quite old in Iowa.
Yes. The NRA now markets guns to kids at 5 years old. I mean, seriously.
You know, in Oklahoma, we got guns a little earlier than that.
Yeah. But anyway.
Like when, as soon as we could walk.
Anyway.
No, I'm kidding.
The problems of all of this gun violence stems from people carrying guns. And I would ask you, if you're sitting in a restaurant like I was about a month ago, and a couple of guys, young men, come into the restaurant with open carry of guns, do you feel safer that, you know, guys that you don't know are obviously feel it necessary to visibly pack a gun in a public place?
I only feel safer when I know the person and I know
exactly
that they know how to handle a gun. Otherwise, open carry, I mean, I think there should, you know, what I, my proposal is that, that anybody who wants to shoot somebody with an open carry have a little, you know, chest cam. You see a guy with an open carry, you have a right to shoot him. There's no trial. You just record it. But, you know, I think they're open carry. They say it's for defense. I think it's for intimidation.
Exactly. And it reminds me of the young boys in junior high that are trying to get attention. And so they strap on a gun and say, hey, look at me. I'm a tough, bad guy. Or don't mess with me. There's no reason to carry a gun unless you plan to use it.
So I stick up a liquor store and there's a guy with open carry. I mean, who do I shoot first? I mean, I'm really against open carry. I think it creates a really negative environment. And I must say if you think guns make you feel safer, you know, go to Europe. Spend a few weeks in Europe where people don't have guns except for hunting, mostly, and you'll see the difference between the gun violence society that we have.
So is concealed carry better?
It certainly makes more sense than open carry. It's less intimidating than open carry. I'm not.
It's not the cry for help that open carries.
Yeah, I mean, one guy I know, he came to a party that we had, and he had two Glocks, one on each hip.
Two Glocks. All right.
And he had
rough party.
He had all this ammunition belts and all this sort of stuff. And I said to him, because this is my oaky humor. I said to him, "You're a good shot, are you?" Because he's got 100 rounds of ammunition and two guns. It's like, unless the unless ISIS arrives in this party, what's he ever going to use it for? And he didn't get it for a while, and then he got it. He wouldn't speak to me for almost a month when he realized referring to his accuracy of weapon, which I'm sure he was very good at.
To put this in perspective, if you think back a couple of years ago to the Ebola scare, we had two people die in the United States from Ebola. One contracted it outside the U.S. The other, you know, contracted it while caring for someone else. No, actually, both of them contracted it outside the United States. We had the media going crazy. We had people afraid to go into public places because of two deaths from a disease that was occurring on another continent halfway around the world. Compare that to 33,500 shootings in the U.S. and last year, and 3,000 shooting deaths, including 500 children. We have virtually, you know, a dozen 9/11s every year.
My life is fairly small. You say there was a shooting at Penn Station this morning.
Yeah.
Those kinds of places scare the crap out of me. For that very reason, it's so common now in this country that any time I am in a crowd, I rarely go to Phoenix, but every once in a while I do. I was walking around downtown when I went to see Bernie Sanders. Was that 2 months ago when 11,000 people in Phoenix turned out to see Bernie Sanders? I was in downtown Phoenix strolling through the parking garage waiting, knowing that somebody was going to shoot me coming around any corner. I was at the Phoenix Convention Center is where the that's the last time I was in a crowd in Phoenix.
And Bernie Sanders is not exactly a gun control advocate in the past, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the problems I think he has in the Democratic primary is that he has a high NRA rating and he's voted against the Brady Bill 3 or 4 times, and comes from a rural state where there's a lot of hunting in Vermont.
I have no problem with guns. I was in the military. I like things that go boom. I think people ought to own them. I just think they ought to have. I mean, just
let me throw out two more statistics that are pertinent to this. Is that 82% of Americans, according to recent studies, believe gun violence is a serious problem in the United States. 82%. 76.
That dispels one of the myths that gun control is not popular politically.
Okay, but
it's very popular.
But Mike, only 44%. And these are Gary's statistics, but I saw them yesterday when I was doing some research. Only 44% of Americans, according to the Gallup poll, support stricter gun control legislation. Now, when you break it down, it's sort of like the Democratic platform. When you break down the pieces of the Democratic platform, they're all popular. When you break down an overall statement like that, then it's unpopular.
It, coming from a background dealing with lots of research and studies, it all depends on how you ask the question.
Well, sure.
But you're right. 44% are not, and only 44% favor stricter gun laws. But if you ask them about universal background checks, I think the number is something, I didn't write it down, but it's something like 76%.
Yeah, it's very high. That's what I was getting at. If you ask them the individual questions, like should there be background checks, like Mike wants to have, then the support for it is overwhelming. If you ask the general question, at least in the Gallup poll, support for stricter gun measures has been in decline over the last few years. It's not huge, but it's a few percentage points.
I think the problem is that a lot of people believe that any form of gun control is a slippery slope. That's an argument used with regard to almost every issue, and it makes it very emotional. But there is, Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court, the very conservative Supreme Court justice, is on record as saying that the Second Amendment, like the First Amendment and every other thing in the Constitution, is not absolute.
The NRA and to a lot of gun folks, it is absolutely absolute, and it's almost a religion, I mean, some people are Christians or Muslims or Jews or Hindus, and some people seem to almost worship guns and the power of guns and the power of violence. It's almost replacing our traditional religious feelings.
Second only to the National Monuments question in Sedona.
Can you imagine Jesus with an automatic? You're talking about a religion that begins with
you get an instant reaction. As I have been unfriended on Facebook to mention one thing because of my gun control, or at least my gun common sense. I'm not looking for gun control. I'm looking for common sense. I want to finish the background check statistics. If you bought your gun If you purchased your gun, 70% of you get background checks. Okay, this is the study this lady did, Ezreal, I guess I'm going to mispronounce her name. If you bought your gun, if you purchased it, 70, you got a background, 70%. If you did not purchase your gun, but you got it through a transfer or a gift or an inheritance, or you trade it among friends. My friends and my breakfast buddies trade guns all the time. Only 30% of those people get background checks. This is where the 40% figure that I threw out came from. It's kind of an average of, if you zero in on gun buyers, 34% did not get a background check. Among gun owners who got them firearms through transfer, 2/3 did not get a background check. So this is how I came up with, the article does come up with a 40% figure. So all we're talking about here, trying to keep down the mass shootings in the U.S., the daily mass shootings, trying to keep Mike Cosentino from being afraid when he's walking around downtown Phoenix.
Open carry guys and the people who notice.
I would feel better about open carry if I knew he had a background check.
Yeah.
But according to this, four out of ten of those guys haven't had a background check.
No, they don't have background
check. And he's still carrying a gun.
And they're still carrying a gun.
Or two.
The gun is used to intimidate people. And that's why we have these road rage shootings and stuff. But these people are using guns. They're coming into places with guns, whether it's a grocery store. I've seen them in Bash's grocery store. The idea is to intimidate everything, to express their power. Their power and glory is having a gun. Their protection is a gun. Their power
is the ability to kill people. I don't think that's a good idea.
But there is a cult of the gun that goes beyond any kind of rational.
The reason there are so many road rage shootings and things of that sort, and just shootings in general, is because people are carrying guns. They get angry, and if you have it, you'll use it. And that is the real heart of the problem. And I want to, before we get off on something else, I want to finish with the absolutism of the Second Amendment. The First Amendment, the right for freedom of speech, is limited. You can't go into a public place and falsely yell fire. You can't slander or libel people without repercussions. With the Second Amendment, in the 30s, they did away with, or they banned fully automatic machine guns because they were used so repeatedly by the mob, and so, you know, you can't go out and buy an atomic weapon. You can't go buy, you know, a working operational modern tank. There are limits, and there always have been limits.
You need a license to give a facial in this country. You understand? You have to be licensed to get a facial.
You have to have a license to drive a car. You have to have a license.
Those things make sense. But I'm talking about
to build a house. You have to have, you know, show that you can do the job.
We don't want to run out of time before we talk about as smart guns. We have all kinds of ways to really, really, really help the problem. Without infringing on the rights of gun owners. And
why, Gary? Let's go to smart guns, Mike.
Okay, good idea.
Gary, why is the NRA against smart guns? It seems like...
First of all, tell us what it is.
Okay.
Well, a smart gun is a gun that has a chip in it that requires you to be wearing a ring or carrying a card or some other...
Or just like my phone can check my fingerprint.
Right.
Yeah, can do your fingerprint.
Nobody can get in my phone.
And the possibilities... The technological possibilities of having smart guns are expanding. You know, I mean, the amount of the size of the chip you need in a gun to be able to read that you're the owner of the gun is tiny. The ability to change the chip, you know, all that. Go ahead.
The issue is there was a documentary not too long ago, last year, and then 60 Minutes covered it, I think, a couple of weeks ago. We're talking about smart guns, and the a gun shop owner in New Jersey, I believe, was marketing smart guns, which would, by the way, prevent accidental shootings of children picking up a gun and shooting it.
And that alone
would justify
enough reason.
It would also...
That would stop almost all the accidental shootings of kids. If you're on the liberal line, you get constant flood of kids shooting themselves. If you're on the conservative line, you get a constant line of people successfully defending themselves. Now, there are 312 million plus Americans, so sooner or later, there are cases, cases.
It would obviously save 500 deaths of children a year. Because the kids wouldn't, have the fingerprints or the chip to use it with,
All terribly tragic deaths. I mean, not that, there are more or less tragic deaths, but, those children shooting themselves.
But, so anyway, this gun shop owner was going to sell them, was marketing them, and he started receiving death threats. He pulled them from his shop as a result. The NRA was actually, encouraging people to speak up against smart guns.
This guy was on 60.
Why is the NRA against it?
And I want to address it. The other thing it would stop is the stolen gun syndrome. If somebody breaks into your house and steals your gun and then goes and uses it in a crime, it would absolutely stop that. So it does change things dramatically. The NRA is opposed to it because it's a restriction. Any restriction of any sort. The NRA started out as
why should anybody? I have my handgun. Why should anybody else be able to take it and use it? It's my handgun.
It's the slippery slope argument again. The NRA started out as a organization promoting gun safety, and the safe use of guns for hunting, etc. And they no longer represent those people. Those people are members, but they put their money into the NRA to be used for political purposes. They spend like $21 million in the last general election on candidates, to promote candidates. And they really are captives of the gun manufacturers. And so they don't want to, they don't want smart guns because it's a form of regulation, and they like to promote fear, the fear that Mike has of going to Phoenix or, to a convention center. They're hoping that sooner or later he'll become frightened enough that he'll buy a gun, handgun, and carry
it. That's it. I'm joining them. I'm just going to stop fighting them. I'm going to join them.
It's the whole fear thing.
Yeah. I might not stop at one gun. Maybe I'll buy three or four. I can't afford it. I don't know how. We're talking about an investment here.
When I was looking at a book on geography on these places in the Caucasus, in the mountains, in the Middle East, where every family has a tower, every family has its own fort. That's where we're going with this gun stuff. Does that make people safer?
I think it makes it a lot safer. I got the opposite philosophy. Don't get me up there with a gun. Get me in the basement.
No. They all have
hiding
towers. They all have places to retreat to. In because there's all these feuds. Everybody's always shooting at each other.
And the statistics show that even the NRA's, as I read, statistics show that guns are very, very seldom used for self-defense. Stop a mass shooting. That almost never happens. There have been mass shootings stopped by unarmed people, like in the train in France,
right.
And by the people in Tucson that grabbed the gun away from Loeffner. But they're very seldom ever stopped by somebody with a good guy with a gun.
All right. Democrats of the Red Rocks are our proud helpers in putting on Democratic perspective.
The next breakfast is the 19th.
And we have the executive director of the Arizona Democratic Party, who we are going to rake over the coals, asking her, Sheila Healey, why the Arizona Democratic Party is so wimpy in Arizona. And Gary, of course, believes it's marketing. I believe it's money. We have lots of reasons, but we're going to, anyway, come to Old Sedona Bar and Grill, November 19th. Listen to the Democrats of the Red Rocks speaker. VBID, you can get this show and all our shows at VBID.org. VBID.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.